I was 3 when I lost the hearing in one ear, and I've never really struggled with that. But a few years ago, I was given a diagnosis that said the thing that caused your deafness in the first place could migrate into your other ear. And I thought, well, if that happens, that would be terrifying, and there would be things I could do about it. But the thing I've been most concerned about is music. So I decided to start looking into what happens to music if you lose your hearing, and can you get it back again?
How did you find Nick and Holly and Emily, and why was it those three that you focused on?
I feel that the three people in the film really balance the story of music and deafness. So I chose them because together we have a young person, a teenager, and an older man. Together they tell you about these three different perspectives, and I think that makes for quite a full story.
How did you find that they reacted to music via their deafness?
They all had very personal relationships with music that were very, very different to each other. Nick is a music critic, has been for nearly all of his life, and he woke up one morning, suddenly lost the hearing in one ear, and it fundamentally changed how music sounded to him.
If you lose an ear, music becomes completely flat. That was the most disturbing thing of all. The pleasure in music was taken away completely. Is unquestionably something that's been lost. So I do have to find it, to look in rather quieter corners than I've looked before.
Emily was born profoundly deaf to a hearing family. For her, music is something that she learnt to engage with because it's a social thing, I think. She started doing dancing lessons when she was a child and just got more and more and more involved in music and dancing because of that. You know, I think her body couldn't help but respond to the music that she was hearing, or at least perceiving at the dance lessons that she started when she was a child. So she has a very, very, very different experience with music. Holly was born with hearing, but she lost all of her hearing because of meningitis when she was 14 months old. Her parents are both professional musicians, so for them it was a very, very difficult experience, not just because of all the implications of that kind of change in your child, but because of what music means to them. And they've worked very hard with lots of people, therapists and music therapists over the years, her grandparents as well, for her to learn music in a way that's incredibly active.
If I got, like, this book and then a book from the shelf, that book is different because it's got a different story in it. And then if I picked a random piece of music and then a random other piece of music, they're different because they've got their own kind of theme, sort of. Like, one of them might be really dark and spooky, and then the other one might be really bouncy and happy. I'd normally like imagine it with like a dog bouncing along in a big field, or like horses galloping or something.
She's employed loads and loads of different strategies to learn music in a very active way, and now she's this incredible pianist and cello player. So it's obviously worked.
How do you think that changes her experience to say somebody that actually has full hearing, for example?
I think the important thing about music is that however you perceive it is how it's valuable to you. It doesn't matter if what you hear and what I hear is completely different. For you and for me, it can still be just as pleasurable, as immersive, as interesting, as emotional an experience, regardless of what your hearing is. It's really about how your brain and your body perceives that sound. With this film, what we discovered, and I think what we believed all along, was that deafness can be like a superpower. By learning an extra level of appreciation for music as a way of getting into it, you discover things about it that you might not discover if you were just listening to it on an everyday level.
There's a huge scientific part of the film as well. Mm. What did you actually find for going through the scientific route?
There are two scientific routes in the film, really. One is to understand how Holly and Emily are working with what they have through the very new science that exists around music in the brain. It's very new, very exciting. The other route that we took was to go with Nick as he discovered things about his own brain. So we went with him to Texas. His brain was scanned while he was listening to music. And what we all discovered along the way, and it was a very exciting discovery to make with the neuroscientists, was that his brain was finding new places to put music. It had found new places to perceive music. It has started using other parts of the brain because he can't help himself. He's desperate to find music and search for music all the time as a person, but also as a brain. It's what his brain does. It's unavoidable for him. So those two routes, I think, showed us not only what we know about how music and the brain work together and how that's affected by somebody with hearing loss or who's deaf, but also what might happen if it happens to you?
One of the big questions, I think, for the film was, if you lose sound, do you have to try and find it, or can it find you? Now, in the process of making this film, what do you actually think? Is it something that you find, or does music actually seek you out no matter what?
Holly says in the film, and she's talking about her parents, her professional musician parents, who are both very talented. She says, you can come from someone amazing, but I think you have to learn to find music to be good at it. And I think that that's what's happening. I think your brain can't help but seek music, it can't help but seek patterns. And so music is there, it's out there, sound is out there for you all the time. But you have to put in energy, effort, time, and you have to have the resources and the support to enable you to do that. But together, you finding music and music finding you, incredible things can happen.